Good morning. I want to invite you to turn in your Bible to Matthew chapter 2. We'll be there in a few minutes. Matthew chapter 2. We are starting a new series, as Ken mentioned, called The Gift. And maybe you're like me, we all know someone, maybe someone in your family that is really, really difficult to find a gift for. Anybody have a person like this in their life? That you just really, you just every year, you just really struggle to know, what am I going to get this person? Maybe, whether it's their birthday or whether it's the Christmas holiday season. So I thought I would help you out. Here's some gift ideas for people who have it all. Okay, you ready? Let's see if my clicker works here. Okay. The first is, there's a website, a company called Perpetuate. Perpetuate. And what you can do is you can, they will take a sample of your pet's blood and then they will clone their DNA and they will keep some of it in their vault until technology improves. But then some of it, they'll go ahead and they'll make an attempt to clone your pet. But just in case it doesn't work out, they keep some on file. And so if, for the person who has everything, they don't have two, literally, of the exact same pet. So you help them clone their pet. There you go. That's gift idea number one. It only costs $1,300. So there you go. Gift idea number two. You can make a personalized movie trailer of a friend or loved one's life for $295 with yourlifemedia.com. Okay, so if you want to surprise somebody that you love with their very own movie trailer about their life, I don't know that any of us really know anybody that's that interesting, but go ahead if that's something that you want to do. I love this one. For only $24,950, you can get your very own hot tub tugboat. There you go. That's only $24,000. This no big deal for most people. If you want a hot tub boat, I mean, it's Louisiana. We like the water. So I don't know. That's a great, I guarantee you, if you know somebody who has it all, they don't have a hot tub. Okay. So there you go. Or here you go. For only $15, you can register your friend or loved one with the Mars One mission, and maybe they'll get selected for the first one-way trip to Mars. Some of you have a lot of people in your life that you'd like to sign that up for. Application fees starting at $15. So if your friend is a doctor and knows 10 languages and has perfect genetics and is an Olympic athlete and drives you crazy with their politics, sign them up. You never know what'll happen, okay? Well, what would you give to the person who has everything? It's the time of year when people often give each other gifts. And in this time of year, in theory, we do so to honor Jesus. At least that's what we say. Now, a quick disclaimer. Listen, we all know, at least I hope you know, Jesus probably wasn't born on December 25th. I know, shocker. And we all get that. But suppose one of you adopted a child from overseas. And maybe you didn't have all the paperwork and the agency you went through wasn't exactly sure the exact day that this child was born on. Would you say, well, you know, we don't really know exactly what day this child was born on, so we're just going to celebrate their birthday every day. Every day we rejoice that our child was born. You could do that. Or you could do the opposite. You could say, well, we don't really know what day this child was born on, so we're never going to celebrate their birthday. Would you do that? No. Okay, so here's the thing about Christmas is, look, we know Jesus probably wasn't born on December 25th. That's fine. But here's the thing. Many, 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 many people in the world right now are thinking about the idea that God became flesh and lived in our midst in the person of Jesus. And he was born as a human being and related to us in every way. And so if the world is thinking about that right now, then why would we stand back and fold our arms to make a point? So that's why we talk about the birth of Jesus during this time of year. Again, we know that it probably didn't happen at that exact time, and that's okay. But we're going to celebrate anyways, because we think it matters to remember what God has done for us, not just on the cross and in the resurrection, but that God became one of us in the person of Jesus. So it's that time of year when people give gifts to each other in honor of Jesus. And so here's some questions. I'm going to ask us some questions this morning. First, is Jesus honored by the gifts that we give? Is Jesus honored by the gifts that we give? What if we were to ask this question? What gift would I give to Jesus? I mean, it's his birthday, right? I saw someone recently wearing a sweater. It had the picture of Jesus on it. It was a very Christmassy-looking sweater, and it just said birthday boy on it. And I thought, okay, that's kind of funny. But it's a little funny to think about giving a gift to Jesus. I mean, he is, after all, God in the flesh. So what do you give to the one who literally has it all? The one who made it all? What would you give? What kind of gift would you give to that person? And the more important question underneath that, which is going to frame our time together over the next 3 weeks, is this. Considering the gift that God has given to us in his son Jesus, that he has given himself to us, what response does that stir in you? When you think of the magnitude of all that God has given, what is your response? We could say that because of what God has done, that we owe God something. And that would technically be true. We owe God everything. Nothing we have comes from our hand. It all is a gift. We could say that God has a demand on us, that we owe God something, but God doesn't want to demand what is owed to him. He'd rather receive what we offer in joy and in gratitude. And so the question again, when you think of the magnitude of all that God has given, what response stirs in you? And what might you offer to God for all that God has done? What would be the gift that you offer? Well, in the gospel story, in the Gospel of Matthew, we hear of some wise men, as they're typically called, who come to give honor to Jesus when he is born. And they come bringing gifts with them. And so we're going to read that story. It's familiar to many people, even people who don't really read the Bible very much. They are pretty familiar with this story because it's often told during Christmas time. And there's songs about the three kings, the three wise men. We don't know that they're kings, and we don't know that there were only three, but there are three gifts given. And so we're going to read this story in Matthew chapter 2, starting in verse 1. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi, or wise men, Magi from the east, came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshiped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. So they give these three gifts. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. I saw a funny cartoon this week, and I forgot to put it in my slides, but it's got the three wise men who bring gold, frankincense, and myrrh. But this cartoon had the three wise women who brought actual gifts that actually would have mattered, like a week's supply of diapers and some formula and some free babysitting coupons, right? Because it would be just like three men to come and bring gifts to a baby that nobody really needs. I mean, okay, the gold part's pretty nice, but why give frankincense and myrrh to a baby? Okay, well, we'll talk about that over the next few weeks. All three of these gifts are gifts that people might give to a king in this culture, in Jesus' culture. Myrrh commonly was used as an anointing oil, frankincense as a perfume in worship, and gold as a valuable, as something often given to a king. There's an ancient inscription where the king, the Seleucid king, King Seleucus II Callinicus, which is just a great name, offers an offering to the god Apollo. And wouldn't you know, the king, Seleucus II Callinicus, thought the most appropriate gift to offer to the god Apollo in the year 243 BC in the temple at Miletus, he gave these three gifts. He gave to Apollo gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And so Matthew may want people to draw a connection to exactly what's going on here by reminding people that these gifts that these magi bring, that this has been done before. It has been done in a particular kind of way, in a particular context, given to a god. But these gifts also have other significance. For the people of Israel, the prophet Isaiah had prophesied a day when God would restore his people and God would start to put everything back together again, and God would set in motion a plan to restore and redeem not just his people, but the whole world. And God's people at that time, they were in exile, and everything they had known had been destroyed. Everything that they had hoped for was gone, and they had lost their faith and their hope in God. And it's in that context that Isaiah says these words in Isaiah chapter 60. He says, from the word of the Lord, arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord rises upon you. See, darkness covers the earth, and thick darkness is over the peoples, but the Lord rises upon you, and his glory appears over you. Nations will come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn. Lift up your eyes and look about you. All assemble and come to you. Your sons come from afar, and your daughters are carried on the hip. Then you will look and be radiant. Your heart will throb and swell with joy. The wealth on the seas will be brought to you. To you the riches of the nations will come. Herds of camels will cover your land. Young camels of Midian and Ephah, and all from Sheba will come, bearing gold and incense and proclaiming the praise of the Lord. So when Matthew tells this story of Jesus' birth, and the first readers who would have heard Matthew's account, this story of these wise men who bring gifts, these aren't just gifts. They may have heard the story of King Selenius and the gift that he gave to a god involving gold, frankincense, and myrrh, but they most certainly would have known their own tradition that Isaiah had spoken the word of the Lord, that when everything had fallen apart and there was no hope and the world was covered with darkness and they didn't believe that God was with them anymore and they were heartbroken and they didn't know that there was a future or tomorrow, that in that moment Isaiah spoke for God and said, there will be a day when everything will be restored and made right, and I will lift up my people, and in those days, people, foreigners, people who are not yet part of the story, they will come, and they will come bringing gifts. And maybe that's what Matthew's up to when he's telling this story. Gold was a symbol of kingship on earth. Gold is what you might give to a king. It might be what a king demands as tribute to his subjects, from his subjects, that they pay him gold and taxes. Jesus is, in fact, a king, as the story will go on to tell us. And for those who have put our trust in him, we believe that he is our king. We've sung songs this morning about God's reign and about how Jesus is our king. king. And gold is certainly a gift fit for a king, an appropriate offering to the one who would usher in a new kingdom. Have you ever stopped to think about why King Herod in this story is so threatened by a little baby? Why is he so fragile and afraid of some peasant kid born in a backwoods part of the empire in a little town to parents who are nobody, who are poor and who are nobody? Why is he afraid? Because when you're king, the thing you fear most is not being king. And when you're told that there's another king coming that's not you or not in your family, you're threatened. Jesus is, in fact, the king. We believe by faith. He's our king. He's the king of everything. He is all and in all. He is Lord of heaven and earth. He is the Prince of Peace. He is the King of Kings. And so gold was an appropriate gift from these wise men, these magi from the East. And so as we think about this gift today, first of all, I mean, everything that we're about to say, this isn't about literal gold. Very few of us in this room have any literal gold at all. Maybe you have a small piece of jewelry, a ring, a wedding ring maybe, or a necklace that has a little bit of real gold in it. And it's also not necessarily about literal money, what we're about to talk about. What we're talking about this morning, I think, is better defined just in a general way. What do you value? Gold is valuable, and in many cultures, it's the most valuable thing that there is. And so another question for us to consider this morning, what is most valuable to you? Certainly, we would probably mention some relationships in our life, some friendships, some family. We might mention our opportunities or our privilege or our education or the place or time in which we live and or the resources that we have. And so here's another question. How might you think this week about offering what is most valuable to you to Jesus? Three ideas. The first is honor. Do we think of our everyday lives as opportunities to honor Jesus? We have all kinds of different ways in our culture that we honor people. Maybe we throw them a great banquet or a party, maybe a great televised event or a big ball that's thrown for people. We have awards ceremonies, don't we, to honor certain people for great achievements or for things that they've done or things that they've given. When we have leaders that are elected, we have great pomp and circumstance in their inauguration. And that's rightfully so because it's a big thing. It's an important thing to celebrate, to give honor where honor is due to those who are our elected officials. That's an important thing. And I believe that our country does that very well. And it's always so much fun, regardless of how you feel about election outcomes or things, when you get to watch an inauguration and you just think this is an incredible thing to not just honor that person there who was voted for, but to honor a system in which a transfer of power has occurred and no blood was shed. What an incredible thing to pay honor to that, right? It's inspiring. And that's why I believe so many people show up and tune in and watch, because we know, we sense deep down inside that giving honor where honor is due is important. It's valuable. It matters. It matters in this world and it matters to us. So what do you honor? Who do you honor? And what might it look like to offer your honor first and foremost, and maybe exclusively, to Jesus? What would that look like? Here's another one, our resources. Do we see our resources as belonging to ourselves or to our King? If you want to create an argument at the holidays. I'm assuming your family has diversity of thought, social and political thought. Ask at the Christmas table, at the Thanksgiving table, whether or not people around the table believe that for those in our society who are most vulnerable, for those in our society who are poor or who lack their needs being met, ask them, should the government step in and take care of those needs, or should God's people step in and take care of those needs? And then just sit back and get some popcorn and just watch the fireworks. It's just a great way. I mean, this, if you want to ruin Christmas, that's one way to do it. And the reason that conversation, I think, has so much fuel, so much just gasoline, just so much tinder just piled up waiting to be ignited is because when you start talking about what we do with our money and what other people tell us we should do with our money, or what other people demand of us that we do with our money or not do with our money, things start to get heated. We start to take personally when people imply that we should be using our money in ways that we might not agree with. We know best what to do with our resources. And so, something for us to consider, for those of us, all of us who live in a system like that, a government like that, none of us really knows what it's like to live in a kingdom where, whether you like it or not, it all belongs to the king. You don't have a say in that. Your house belongs to the king. Your land belongs to the king. Your horses or vehicles or whatever you own belong to the king. Technically, in some ways, your children even belong to the king. You remember what God tells the people of Israel, what Samuel tells the people of Israel when they want a king. He tells them, look, he's going to come. He's going to take your stuff. He's going to take your resources. Parents, he's going to take your sons. He's going to conscript them into his army. Think about whether or not you want that. That's the way a kingdom works. And so here's the question. Do you believe Jesus is your king? It's easy to say before we start thinking about what it means to call him our king and to realize that when you live under a king, everything you have belongs to the king. And so it's a little strange when we say, and I think it's appropriate when we say, I'm not picking on us, when we say during communion that when we give, when we are after communion, usually when we make the offering, that we say we're giving a little bit back of what God's given to us. We're giving a little bit back to him. Again, I'm not picking on that. That's an appropriate thing to say. But if you kind of go underneath that a little bit and you take it, just the details a little bit too far, you just press that a little bit, you realize it's not really appropriate to say that we're giving anything back to God because it's already his. He owns it. It was never ours to begin with. Are we really giving it back, or are we just acknowledging that it's his to begin with? I would be wary, and I think religious people for generations have been wary of religious leaders who will stand up and say, you have to give this amount. You owe this much, and here's why, and you got to be a little wary of that. And that's why at this church, we don't specify a certain amount about as far as what we offer to God, what we try to give of our lives. We just say that there's this principle that God has given all to us, and that stirs something in us that we want to give back, that we want to contribute to what God's doing in the world. And so we give freely, we give generously, we give as much as we can. And we do that not because we love everything that's going on or because we always agree with everything, but because we believe in what God is doing and we want to be part of that. And this isn't just about a contribution. It's not about the offering. It's not about passing the plates each week. It's about our whole life. What do you do with your resources, and how do you see them? Do you see your resources as belonging to yourself or to Jesus, the King? And what might it look like for you to go home today and to look at what you have and to think about what it might look like to give more? Listen, I know many of us, things are tight, and giving more money might not be a possibility. But we've talked many times about how time is a resource. Energy and talents and giftedness is a resource. And so, how might we use our resources to give our King honor? And the third thing that I want to talk about is allegiance. Does our allegiance belong to our King? Or are we giving our allegiances to other things? Here's a question that I've heard my whole life when someone asks that question. Well, do we really have to choose? Can't we give our allegiances to several different things? I mean, there's lots of important things to give your allegiance to. And while I agree with that last part in principle, that there's a lot of important things to give your allegiance to give honor to, I want to ask this question. Can you imagine someone living under a real king saying that they're allegiant both to that king and then to another king or another country somewhere else? Can you imagine that? That doesn't work really well in a real kingdom, does it? That just doesn't happen. The king is the one king, and it's your king, and you're allegiant to that king or you're not. And if you are, then that's your only allegiance. Anything else that is valuable or important or that matters, matters less than that. And so the short answer to can't we have allegiances to several different things, the short answer to that is no. We really can't. Again, that doesn't mean that we can't be part of other things that matter and that are important. But we must choose. Jesus says this. He says it about money. You can't serve both God and money. One is going to be your master or the other. If Jesus is our king, it's Jesus plus nothing. And so the invitation this week is to think about what we value. We value what we honor. We value our resources. We value what we're allegiant to. And so how might you offer your allegiance more fully to Jesus? What does that look like in your life? This season, I want to invite us to consider what it might look like to fully devote what we value most to our King. And I want you to imagine how your life might be different, and I want you to imagine how the lives of those around you might be different and might be changed if we were to lean into that a little more in the coming weeks and months. Because a group of people who are willing to give what they value most to their king is a group of people who can make a real change in the world around them and in the lives of the people around them. During the Second World War, there was a Polish priest named Maximilian Kolb who was arrested by the German Gestapo for hiding Jews and Polish refugees from the Nazis. And when there was an escape from the prison camp from Auschwitz, when three prisoners disappeared, the deputy camp commander issued orders to pick 10 random men to be starved to death in order to deter further escape attempts. One of these men, when his name was called out, began to cry out, "My wife, my children, I have a family, I will never see them again." And at this point, Maximilian Kolb stepped forward and removed his cap and said, "I am a Catholic priest, let me take his place. I am old, he has a wife and children." And amazingly, the camp commander agreed to the request. In the starvation cell, he celebrated communion each day and sang hymns with his fellow prisoners. And after 2 weeks of dehydration and starvation, only Kolb, the priest, remained alive. And because the cell was needed for other prisoners, he was given a lethal injection. And those present say that he raised his left arm and calmly waited for the injection. The priest who gave it all. There's another story about a father who gave everything he owned to his two sons, and one did the responsible thing and did everything right, and the other son threw everything away and insulted his father's honor in every single way. But then he chose to come home. He came to his senses and he decided it'd be better to be a servant in my father's house than to die here all alone, far away. And so he came home, and while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and ran to him and wrapped his arms around him and hugged him and kissed him and embraced him and threw his robe around him and threw an extravagant feast, a great party. The father spent it all. He wasted it all for one reason: love. When you love, you give it all, because love is more precious than gold. God is like that father who gave it all. God has already given the greatest gift. He gave us himself through his son Jesus. And it's that grace that stirs within us a desire to give back to God in response whatever we can. So what gift would you bring? Love is more precious than gold. And so may you today, may you and I, may we honor and lift up our King. May we give whatever we can, the gift that we can bring to the one who gave his all for us. That's good news. It's good news that God is not stingy and closed-fisted, but that God has given so freely to us. And it will be good news to the world when we, as God's people, his children, who have been redeemed and restored and who are being changed day by day more and more into his image, when we give our lives back to him, when we give of ourselves to those around us, the world will see, and they will give honor and glory to God. Amen. We're going to stand and we're going to sing this song together. We will glorify the King of Kings. Let's stand, let's sing, and let's sing to our King. Amen.